Hi, I'm Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Governor Phil Scott announced last week that travelers who have been fully vaccinated against the novel coronavirus do not have to quarantine when visiting or returning to Vermont. And new guidelines for long-term care facilities should finally bring some relief to residents and family members who have been yearning for the ability to get together. Just today, the governor said fully vaccinated households can gather with one other household, even if that second household has unvaccinated members. As long as all the members of one of the households are vaccinated, they're allowed to visit one other household at a time. We're joined now, as we are most weeks, by Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan. Tracy, thank you very much for being with us again.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Jane. It's good to be here.
So let's talk first about the very latest news, because this may be buzzing in people's minds if they were listening to today's press briefing. So it was earlier announced that vaccinated individuals will no longer have to quarantine when coming into the state of Vermont. The announcement today relates to household gatherings. So if all members of one household are vaccinated, that could be one person or more members of a household. As long as all the members of one household are fully vaccinated, they'll be allowed to visit with one other household at a time, even if that second household has unvaccinated members, correct?
Yes, and I think that's exciting news for a lot of people in Vermont. I'm thinking specifically for a lot of grandparents. It's a great day. I already texted my kids' grandparents.
So both of those grandparents are or will be fully vaccinated?
Yeah, they're fully vaccinated, and so I asked them to check and see if they're 14 days out. And it's great. You know, it really reflects what we're learning, what we had hoped the science would tell us. When you're moving with vaccine trials, the end point when you need to get it out quickly in an emergency is whether or not people are getting ill. The end point when you have more time and you're not in emergency would be, does it also prevent transmission? And so it's taken a little longer for that data to come in, but we were hopeful, and it does appear that more of the data is showing that there is a significant preventive effect as well, which allows us more comfort in people who are fully vaccinated getting together in a limited way with people who are not vaccinated, obviously not wanting large gatherings because you don't want the unvaccinated people gathering among each other. But that's really the key to the one household at a time. What we're saying is if you're vaccinated, if grandma and grandpa are vaccinated and they come down to spend time with one household, that's okay because you're really limiting that household to just being with each other in terms of the unvaccinated people.
Let's go through just a couple of scenarios that may apply to a significant number of people, because I think they're already coming in, and maybe we can use a couple of examples to address concerns that many Vermonters have. Let's say the grandparents or, you know, the members of a household are age 72 and fully vaccinated and aged 64 and not fully vaccinated. That household would not be considered fully vaccinated. Those two grandparents can't then go visit their unvaccinated grandchildren together, correct?
That's right. The one grandparent who is 14 days out from their final vaccine shot could go, but not the other. That's correct.
And on the travel requirements, so some families, many of the Vermonters who have been vaccinated are in older age groups, but not all. Certainly members of Group 1A included people who were not in senior age groups. So there could be scenarios where a family has two parents who are vaccinated who would like to travel out of state to visit their parents, you know, visit the grandparents, visit something else. Their children who are not vaccinated still fall under the quarantine requirements. So a family may not go out of state, even if the adults in the household are fully vaccinated, without the children at least having to comply with the quarantine requirements still.
Yeah, the children would still need to comply. That's correct.
And, you know, when the state thinks about equity, does that start to become an issue? You know, I can imagine families with kids thinking ahead to not being able to leave the state for the summer. Things may be different by then, or go to camp, or, you know, younger individuals saying, hey, you know, people who have been vaccinated have these freedoms that I don't have. How is that equitable? How is that fair as we all wait our turn? How does the state respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, equity is important wherever we can exercise it. But of course, right now we have 66% of people 75 and older vaccinated. So it might feel unfair that a couple who are in their 80s can go visit with someone. But, you know, also we wouldn't want to stop people from doing what we know the science says is safer to do simply because others people are not able to do it. And so we really need to balance that and provide as much freedom as we can where the public health science backs it, even when not everyone can take advantage of that freedom at the same time. But we are moving quickly. You heard the governor talk about more vaccine coming in. So really, we're hoping that this is you know, under control in terms of the timing, that we get there sooner and that we accelerate so that we can get to the place where everybody can go and visit at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a case to be made that people should have as much freedom as they are able to have based on the available science. But I think there also is or could be the potential for some frustration that people who say, OK, I'll wait my turn. I want those who are the most vulnerable to be vaccinated first. But to now see people able to do things that younger people who may feel I'm not as vulnerable anyway, even if I got it, can't do, I think that could lead to some frustration as the state is still asking people to please wait their turn, don't jump the line, don't try to find a way to get vaccinated more quickly. You know, does this set the state up for more frustration or Vermonter against Vermonter when what the state has been asking for is solidarity?
You know, I feel like we've had a lot of solidarity throughout, even early on when we knew that there were essential workers out there who were facing different risks than people who were able to work at home. That's a real disparity. And yet I do not feel like Vermonters were pitted against Vermonters at that point. I feel like all along here we're seeing situations where not everyone can always act in the same way. Because of our situations, because of our health status, because of vaccine available. And so for sure, there's frustrations all along the way. There are frustrations now, of course, you know, that vaccine is going, even though most people understand that we're bringing vaccine to the elderly, because clearly our data show that their highest need, there are still people who say yes, and I'm frustrated. And I can understand holding both of those feelings. Even as we move into the spring, maybe, you know, there's a family or an elderly couple that can go visit, but another family with younger kids or who is just younger and not vaccinated yet can't. And feeling like I'm glad they can and I'm frustrated I can't. So it's not a black and white. I think there are a lot of mixed feelings in a lot of us as we see things get better, but then feel impatient. When does it get better for me?
Let's go to Grace calling in from Essex. Hi, Grace. Go right ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yep. Loud and clear.
Hi. I thank you for taking my call. I just wanted some clarity on the households with vaccinated people being able to gather. Would those people still be required to wear masks when they gather?
Grace, can I ask you, do you mean if everybody in the gathering, all of the members of the gathering are fully vaccinated, or do you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's just say two individuals and they're both vaccinated and over 14 days have gone by since the second vaccination. Do those people have to wear masks when they gather?
Deputy Commissioner?
No, as far as I know, if you're 14 days out from your second vaccine and you go to visit with your family in another household and that household is unvaccinated, to the best of my knowledge, we're not saying that you need to wear a mask during that visit.
She's saying if everybody is vaccinated. So let's say
if everybody is vaccinated.
Yeah, you and your friends want to get together, you know, have dinner. You're vaccinated. Your friend is vaccinated. Should both of you still wear masks?
No, especially if the key is that you're 14 days beyond your second dose. No, we're not requiring masking there.
And so you said it, you think in the gathering, you know, if the vaccinated individuals are gathering with a household that has unvaccinated individuals, they also aren't required to be masked. I thought we were hearing that vaccinated individuals in all cases should still be following those prevention guidelines, including wearing masks.
I'm going to check in on that. I believe what the governor announced today is a slightly different case. So let's hold and see if I can get an answer back to you. I didn't hear him speak specifically about masking, and I'm not seeing the details on masking yet. So I will hold on that. I believe this is a slightly different case, but I will check back in.
Okay, good. So yeah, we'll Grace and others await follow-up on whether people who are gathering need to be masked, whether they're vaccinated or unvaccinated. We'll get some clarity on that. Another thing that came up today that we should just mention here at the top of the show is that the next age banding group, those age 65 and above, will be eligible to register to get their vaccine starting on March 1st. That's next Monday, right, if I have that correctly?
Yes.
All right. So starting on March 1st, I can hear Tracy Dolan typing. I think she's asking somebody to give her some clarity on the mask mandate. No,
okay.
You're fine. You're totally fine. It's better to get clarity. So I'm sorry to be asking you questions while you type
as
well.
Yes, that's okay. No problem.
I'll give you a second here to type. As I remind people, our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. Or you can send an email to vermontedition@vpr.org, or you can tweet at Vermont Edition. Does the state have more people who will be operating the phone lines at 8:15 on Monday morning than it did when those age 70 plus were eligible? Because there was a big crush of people, some 7,000 people trying to access the phone lines in the first 15 minutes that they were eligible to be making an appointment to get vaccinated. Now, the state is asking people who can to use the website, but will there be more people operating the phones?
We are going to staff it more. We're also going to probably have some systems in place where you may go into a queue when you call in. So we're going to do a few things. And then also, of course, as our age groups move down and we promote the website more, we also anticipate more people going to the website. So we think the combination of more staff and a call system that allows for queuing, which we're looking at this week, and also probably more people going online. We're hopeful that will relieve some of that. But the reality is, in the first couple of days when we open up an age group, there is going to be a little bit of a wait sometimes if you use the phone.
The state has also said that those who are currently eligible to get a vaccine but maybe have an appointment 2 or 3 weeks from now can call the hotline and potentially get a vaccine appointment earlier than they're currently scheduled for. Is that the correct approach to take if you would like to see if you can get an earlier appointment?
Yes, we do have some availability. And so if you want to move your appointment up, you can call the phone number and try for an earlier appointment.
And again, that's only right now for those who are age 70 and above.
That's right, for 70 and above, if your vaccine appointment is a ways out and you would like to move it up.
And if you're in group 1A, you should be going through the hospital or healthcare provider, not through the state website?
That's right, continuing group A through the hospital. At some point, we're hoping that will get worked into our website, because 1A, all of these categories will remain open because we will continue to have people trickle in. But right now, it's still through the hospital.
Can you give us an update on we know how many doses are coming in to the week. Last week, it was 13.5-ish thousand doses, according to the governor. Next week, it will be about 14,500 doses. And again, those are the initial doses. How many shots are actually being given per week right now? Like, let's say last week, how many vaccine doses were given last week?
I don't have the information in front of me on the number of doses given last week. I can tell you that right now, 16.4% of all eligible Vermonters who could get a vaccine have received it. And that's 66% of those 75 and older, and 17% so far of the 70 to 74. I don't have the number of appointments in front of me right now each week, but we are seeing most people show up for their appointments, and we're certainly, for the most part, maxing out our appointments. And so we're getting them in as quickly as they come.
Let's go to Dell in Worcester. Hi, Dell.
Hi, Jane. I have a question for Deputy Commissioner Dolan, which is, it's either a frustration or a just dopiness on my part about the health department website. I've gone there several times, first to get COVID testing and then to sign up. I'm 74. And each time that I've gone there, I have had to put all my information in again, even though the website has recognized me when I put my name and my email address, and when I tried to sign up for my COVID vaccine, I had to create a new password, and then by the time I got through all that I needed to do, the date that I had asked for was all full, and when I went to a new date, I had to start all over again. So I don't know if it's because I have not figured out how to do it properly or whether there's something kind of inefficient about how that website works.
Thanks for the question, Del. Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah, and so occasionally you might go to the website and you might get stuck in a place on the website. And so I'd say in that case, call the call center and they can work it through for you.
Remind us of the number of the call center. Do you have it handy?
Sure. I will have to pull it up in just a moment.
Yeah,
I will have to call it out in just a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, I just had it in front of me. yeah. I did want to clarify earlier on. Yes, you should wear masks when you visit. That was my error in speaking. And so even though you can visit when you're vaccinated with one other household, I did read, we've got a few more details that weren't spoken about in the conference that we have in writing now.
Mm-hmm.
And it continues to abide by the measures such as facial coverings. And so continue to wear masks when you're vaccinated and visiting with a household. And we'll let you know if that changes.
Okay, so just to be clear, whether everybody in the gathering is vaccinated or not, everybody is expected to follow masking guidelines and continue doing that?
Yes. I think the key sentence here is if Vermonters and visitors, including those vaccinated, must still abide by measures,
okay,
such as facial coverings, physical distancing, and capacity limitations.
Okay, good. Good to know. So clarity on that is, you know, even if you're now allowed to gather, you are still expected to follow all of the distancing and prevention guidelines, including masking. The call center number, I believe, is 855-722-7878.
That's correct, 855-722-7878. And please try the website first, but occasionally you might get a little caught up and not know how to navigate or get back to the right place, and then feel free to call the call center and they can help you out.
Right, and that would be the case for someone like Dell who finds that she has to keep re-inputting all of the information every time, or for people who are trying to move up their vaccine date to an earlier date if there's an available appointment.
Yeah, that's the way for sure for those. You won't be able to go online and do that on your own. So if you need to move that date, as per what Secretary Smith talked about today, call the call center, 855-722-7878.
Let's go to Althea in Brattleboro. Hi, Althea.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I was scheduled for at a site for my first COVID shot tomorrow in Brattleboro. I'd waited 5 weeks for it, and I injured my knee so badly yesterday that I don't think I can get down the stairs or navigate getting to the hospital. So my question is, I'm not on the list of people who are scheduled for home vaccines, but can EMS give me a home vaccine?
Okay, so Althea is newly homebound and perhaps temporarily so. We hope you recover quickly, Althea, but was scheduled for a vaccine dose tomorrow and now can't leave her home. What should she do?
She should call the call center, let them know that she's had a medical event, that she has an injury or a medical appointment, whichever the case, and they will work with her on rescheduling. If it becomes a long-term issue and she requires homebound services, we will eventually have a system set up whereby someone could call into that, or she could call a home health service, whatever the local home health service is. But right now, I would suggest, and I couldn't tell if it was a first or second vaccine.
Althea, was it your first dose? Yep, first dose.
First dose, so.
I don't have a home health care person. And I think this is going to be a long thing because I'm missing cartilage in the knee. And I think without knee surgery, I don't know if I'll ever get better. Mm. So I was hoping that there'd be a way to do a home one. I'm on the second floor on crutches, and the stairs are the problem.
Absolutely. And I'm really sorry you fell. So call the call center. It sounds like rescheduling won't work for you because you may have a long-term issue, in which case, at this point, you could reach out to a home health service, talk to them, find out about possible enrollment there, or call your local area on aging. That would be one other way to try. And eventually, hopefully, we're thinking in the next week or so, we will have a number for people like Althea who are in kind of a unique situation, maybe newly in a homebound situation, who are not currently associated with the service, who could call in and get registered for the homebound program.
Let's go to Walter in Middlebury. Hi, Walter.
Hi. Keep up the good work, Tracy. My question is... I'm curious what the thinking was in excluding homeless shelters from the category of long-term care facilities, as they certainly seem to be that. In addition, they're a place where the congregate living circumstances mean a high risk of community spread. So I wonder if there's any consideration to recategorizing homeless shelters to be included as long-term care facilities for vaccine allocation.
Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah, thanks for the question. We have had and continue to have a lot of discussions about congregate care settings like homeless shelters in figuring out how to prioritize our limited vaccine. We certainly know that the nature of homeless shelters can increase risk. Early on, we did some surveillance testing among homeless shelters and actually did not find that we had higher positivity rates, but primarily our reason for not including those and other long-term care facilities that were not for elderly was because our data clearly showed that it was definitely the older people who were dying and were getting hospitalized at much higher rates than anyone else. And so this was purely the numbers looking at our age. So there may be some increased transmission risk among homeless shelters in the same way that there's probably an increased transmission risk among others who might be in group settings. But we were looking at saving lives and reducing hospitalization. And our data was very clear on where we had to go there. But we recognize everybody needs it.
We have seen significant numbers of cases in Vermont's prisons, including recently, where there have been a number of new cases in several prisons and frequently brought in by correctional officers who are, of course, going into their communities and into their homes and then back into these facilities, which are congregate living facilities, of course. Some states have prioritized incarcerated individuals when it comes to getting the vaccine, and then in some cases have pulled back on that announcement when there was an outcry from citizens. Has that been any part of the consideration for Vermont in not prioritizing incarcerated individuals who, you know, have been at significant risk and many of whom are older?
Yeah, well, certainly among anyone who's older, who's also in our correction system, if they qualified by age for the category, we had people going in and vaccinating them right away as each category opened up. So we have no issue there in terms of access. But in terms of the larger grouping in the congregate setting, recognizing there is, of course, increased risk of transmission because they're as a group, we still made the decision to go the way we went. And we feel like that's made the biggest difference in hospitalization and decreasing our death rate. But we recognize that all states do this a little differently. And it really is a matter of, we've got this much vaccine, we look at the data, and each state makes their best decision based on their public health, their situation, and what works for them.
You know, just ironically, as I was asking you that question, an email has just come in from Vermont DOC saying testing shows new COVID-19 cases at the St. Albans Correctional Facility, Northwest State. And this is one new staff case and 9 new incarcerated cases. When the prisons have a new case, they usually go into full lockdown and sometimes are in modified lockdown. I mean, that is really significant for incarcerated individuals who are already in many cases suffering from pretty significant mental health issues that may be related to isolation. Is there or should there be any consideration not only of the vulnerable status of incarcerated individuals, but the pretty significant mental health effects of prolonged and repeated full lockdown measures?
Yeah, I mean, these are all things that are in consideration. We talk about them. These are hard decisions. There's no doubt about that, right? If we had enough, we would probably quickly be able to figure out who the next groups are or who we'd open up simultaneously. And it's likely that DOC, among many other sectors that we know are in high need, would get it, at the same time if we had enough. Our challenge is limited, and so we've made these choices. But the isolation is hard for inmates, very hard, for example, at the colleges. We're hearing where, some young people are on their own in their rooms for long periods. So we're seeing it across the map in terms of location, in terms of age. That isolation is hard no matter how you cut it. And it's been one of the hardest parts of this pandemic, both the isolation and the quarantine and the mental health and social impacts of that.
Quick question, clarification from Michelle, who says, a colleague of mine owns a home out of state. I was recently told that this person was able to travel out of state and then return to Vermont without quarantining because she owns the out-of-state home. Is this the policy? If yes, how can that be justified to the rest of us that must quarantine?
So I have not heard a policy that says if you own a place out of state, home ownership in or out of state doesn't connect to the policy. If you travel out and you stay overnight and you're not going out for essential purposes and you come back, you need to quarantine, unless, of course, you have been 14 days beyond your second vaccination as per the governor's announcement on Friday. So I probably can't dive too much into this exact case. I'd have to look into the specifics. But to the best of my knowledge, we don't have exceptions for this based on where you own a home.
Kelly, who's an educator in Chittenden County, says, why does the state refuse to even discuss the prioritization of educators for vaccines? Educators have made so many personal sacrifices to keep schools open. This has been a priority stated by the governor since the summer, and the resulting mental health of many school staff is tenuous at best.
First of all, I would say there is nothing we're not discussing in terms of vaccination and priority groups. Teachers have been on the table discussions. Certainly anyone who's doing frontline work, as we just mentioned, corrections, congregate care. We have had discussions about all kinds of groups, and those discussions continue. You know, we're moving into the chronically ill phase now, the high-risk conditions, but I know the governor is continuing to get data, get advice from public health, get advice from education and others about what groups should come next. Again, the more vaccine we have, of course, the more quickly we can move. But there is no sense that it's not being discussed. It is. And again, these are hard decisions, and we're trying to do our very best to save lives, reduce hospitalizations. And as we move past that, figure out what the next highest risk group is. You know, the goal is to protect Vermonters, get kids back in school, get the economy running. That's the overall goal of what we're doing on COVID response. But the very first one, protect Vermonters, does go with the saving lives and reducing hospitalizations. So that's where we've been so far.
When do you think the state will make an announcement about what happens after these initial five bans, which include the group 1A and then these age bans and then those age 16 through 64 who have specified chronic health conditions? When are we going to find out what happens next?
Well, we know that we're opening up 65 plus on March 1st, and probably soon after that, you'll hear an announcement about high-risk medical conditions. So normally, we like to give, I mean, in a perfect world, we would give a notice well in advance to everyone, because there is a lot of anxiety about not knowing when your turn comes. But I'm hopeful that we will, at the time that when we speak about high-risk medical conditions, I'm hopeful we'll be able to give a better sense of what comes after that.
I mean, it's not even that we don't know the date of the next eligible group. We don't even know what the state is thinking in terms of what that group may be and how it's going to prioritize after, you know, those with those vulnerable high-risk medical conditions.
That's right. It's still in discussion, and we're still reviewing the data and trying to figure out what the best plan is.
Let's go to Leah. Leah's calling in from Windsor. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I've been out of state. I live in Pennsylvania. I'm in Windsor, Vermont, taking care of my elderly mom since last March. And my question is, would I be eligible to be vaccinated in Vermont, or do I need to go back to my home state in Pennsylvania?
Leah, did you say how old you are?
I'm 56.
Okay, so you wouldn't be eligible in Vermont under Vermont's current age banding guidelines, right?
Sure. I'm looking ahead into the future when it does open.
I see. Okay. So Deputy Commissioner?
Sure. So far, our policy has been, if you're living here in Vermont and you're here long term and you're not here on vacation, then, you know, it's for Vermont residents. But I will wait. I would wait and see what the eligibility is and the guidance is once we open up to either your age group or depending on your risk condition. But for the most part, we want to make it easy for people. What we don't want is people coming in just for the purposes of getting vaccinated if they think they can get in earlier. But for someone who's here long term, carrying on a regular basis, basically working in Vermont, we would certainly allow it. And so, again, I don't know all the details of your situation, but if you're basically living in Vermont for either family purposes or college or working purposes, you would be eligible to be able to get a vaccine here.
Gail,
if you have a home address here.
Got it. Gail is in Barnett. Gail, you're on the air. Well, you're almost on the air.
Am I on now?
I hear you, Gail. There you are.
I wanted to get off speakerphone because that is a little disturbing. I didn't have a question, but I just want to assure people that for somebody who is in their 70s or 80s or 90s and has been living alone either in a home care facility or alone in their home, getting this vaccine and having the ability to just have a friend to sit and talk to, just to be able to go in a home to the dining room and eat a meal with somebody. It is a totally game-changing, you can't believe how important. My sister is in a nursing home, and she is finally, after a whole year of her meals are delivered to her at her door, and she eats all by herself in her room, and then she puts her tray outside again. And to suddenly be able to walk down the hall and go to the dining room and sit with a friend to eat, it is something that is unbelievable when you have spent 365 days in a row, including holidays, in a room totally alone.
Yeah. Gail, thank you for sharing that. I'm glad to hear your sister is able to do that. And you actually give us a good opportunity to talk about something that we haven't discussed yet, which are these changes to long-term care facilities in terms of visitation, but also in terms of things like what Gail was talking about, the ability for residents now to gather for things like sharing a meal or having socialization, or to be able to get appointments for things like hair care and other non-medical, non-sort of essential medical needs. Can you talk about what those new rules are, Deputy Commissioner, and how long-term care facilities are interpreting them? Because it's not an across-the-board just change for everybody all at once.
No, and the really the best way, if you're either in a facility or you have a loved one in one of the facilities, would be to check in with the facility as to what their rules are. But overall, there's encouragement to use vaccination status in planning for things like opening up the rules around eating together, participating in other group activities on a case-by-case consideration, safe physical contact, and also modifications to quarantine requirements. So we're hopeful that the quarantine requirements would be lifted or modified, and having visitors indoors participating in non-medically essential services such as salon appointments. So a real game changer. But again, those rules coming down through CMS and should be really interpreted by the long-term care facilities. I know that our agency is working with the long-term care facilities, but at this time, for the details of how that would look in your long-term care facility or your loved one's long-term care facility, check in to see how they're interpreting and what those rules are. But certainly in opening up, and like Gail says, when she describes it like that, you know, if you're not in it, it's just easy to forget what it must be like day to day when you're an older person and you're that isolated. And it's heartbreaking. And I'm so glad that we can open that up a little bit. We obviously want to do this as safely as possible, but I appreciate her call.
It sounds like it does vary, though, by facility, not just in, you know, what the cases are like, but also in how facilities are interpreting this. We got a note from Samantha on Twitter who says, I contacted Birchwood Terrace, which is in Burlington, and they said they're awaiting further information from Governor Scott, so no visits are being scheduled yet.
Yeah, we know that this will be effective February 26th. And so I'm hopeful that the guidance specific for these long-term care facilities will be out on February 26th.
Got it.
So this is a preview of what's to come starting in a few days.
I see. So people who are looking for all of the specific details and can't find it, they just need to wait a couple of days and then it will be out.
Yeah, right now, if you look for this, you won't find all the details. And so it should be out. Hopefully it will be posted on the Department of Health website, but also the long-term care facility will have that information as well then.
Good, because I couldn't find it, and I thought it maybe was just me.
Yeah, no, I couldn't find it either, so I thought maybe it was just me. So I called around, and it's just not out yet.
Ellen is with us from Halifax. Ellen, you're on the air now. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. So I am 64. I have a son and his family, including young grandkids, out on the West Coast. Haven't seen them for over a year and a half. I live alone. So I understand that, you know, people with high medical risk should be next. But I'm just wondering if there's any sense how it's going to work after that. Are we going to stick with age banding or and just any sort? I'm trying really hard to be patient. Most of the other people I know are older than me, and so they're all getting vaccinated, and it's really getting hard.
Yeah, boy, Ellen, I can sympathize. I'm sure it is really hard. Tracy Dolan, do you have anything that you could give her to help her keep going?
Yeah, Ellen, and first of all, thank you for the kind words around how well we're doing, and I'm going to pass that on to all the people who work very long hours on all of this effort and let them know that you appreciate that. I wish that I had more specific information. I know it's hard to be patient and it's somewhat anxiety provoking. We don't know exactly how it's going to look after the high risk conditions. It could be continuing by age. We've had obviously some success with that, but there's also the possibility that looking at a sector or a particular workforce might make more sense. So we just don't know yet. I know that the governor is wanting to be very careful about making this decision, but he also recognizes, as does the commissioner, that people are very anxious and worried about it. I can tell you there will be enough vaccine for everyone, and we are hopeful with the rate of vaccination and the vaccines we're getting that everyone should be able to have access to the vaccine in the coming few months. But unfortunately, I don't have more information than that. And thank you for continuing to, you know, follow the rules. It's hard. I know I haven't seen my family on the West Coast in almost 2 years now. And I know that feeling, and it's very hard. And I hope that this summer brings that change and those visits to connect you again.
Let's talk a little bit about some other issues that haven't quite come up yet. Has the B.1.1.7 variant of the virus been officially found in Vermont samples that are getting genomic sequencing yet?
Not yet, no. We heard yesterday that we were supposed to hear back, but we have not heard a report back yet, you know, which is good news, but also we anticipate it's probably here. What's good is that in order for a vaccine, or pardon me, for a virus to mutate, it needs to replicate. And in order to replicate, it needs to move from person to person. And so because we have lower rates, you know, we have a 1.6% positivity rate over a 7-day average. That is really helping us that even if the virus, the mutated virus arrives and appears, we have less virus. And so there's really less opportunity for it to replicate. So is it here? Probably. Will we find out? Probably at some point. But the more we do what we're doing, getting people vaccinated, continuing to mask, distance, and avoid crowded places, it really decreases, hopefully, the impact of this variant on Vermont.
And for the samples that are being sequenced, how many samples are being sequenced each week? Do you know?
I don't have that number on how many are being sequenced.
But they are being checked for any kind of variant. I mean, presumably when they're getting the genomic sequencing, you'd be able to look at the whole virus and say, you know, this is the standard strain that we've been seeing a lot of, or this is the B.1.1.7, or this is something we don't know about. You know, it's not just B.1.1.7, which was first identified UK that people are looking for.
That's right. It's not just B.1.1.7. It will also identify other variants. That's correct.
As we heard in today's press briefing, and as people who have been following national news will be aware of, it's expected that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine may get emergency use authorization, which is what all of these vaccines are getting right now, to be able to be used quickly this week. And Governor Scott said that could mean that several thousand doses of that vaccine will be coming into Vermont pretty quickly and presumably going into people's arms. How will the state determine who gets that vaccine versus the two-shot Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, especially because people are wondering about the effectiveness of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which has shown to be highly effective in preventing severe cases, but not necessarily as effective in preventing contraction of the virus.
That's right. And, you know, what you just said is key. When we look at vaccine effectiveness, the number one measure we look at is whether or not it prevents significant illness or death. And in terms of that, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is very effective in the same way the Pfizer and Moderna is. Another advantage to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is that it is more stable, and so it can be refrigerated in a regular way for a long period. It also appears to be more effective against some of the variants we're seeing. So there's some benefits. But as you know, and as people have read, some of the more mild or moderate symptoms, it may be not as effective against. And so right now, when we get vaccine in, vaccine is vaccine, and it's available for people, and we know it's effective, and we're getting it out there, and people aren't choosing vaccine. And so one option would be to simply put it in the mix like we would put all other vaccine in the mix. Another option would be to take that and look at a whole population or a whole sector or a whole grouping and say, let's move because of the way we can transport and store this, let's use this in a unique environment. But we haven't made decisions like that. I do know that we will take the vaccine we can get. We feel very confident in so far in what we're hearing about the safety of it and the efficacy of it. And again, just a reminder that, you know, some of our vaccines like flu vaccine, which we very much encourage people to do, the effectiveness there really is around severe illness and death. And so in the same way, that is the number one measure we look at in a vaccine.
I can't find the email right now, but I got a question from a listener who wanted to know what's currently known about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and long haulers. These are people who continue to experience health effects long after contracting COVID-19. And the questioner wanted to know if there's any data on whether this Johnson & Johnson vaccine prevents lingering symptoms even if people contract the virus.
I don't have information on what the impact is of this vaccine on folks who are long haulers. I don't actually have that information on the other two vaccines either. I'm not sure that research is being done, or if it is done, I'm not sure it's been significant enough for us to receive findings on that piece yet.
Karen wrote in to say, as a healthcare provider, I was able to get my first COVID vaccine, the Moderna one, on Saturday from Walgreens in Bellows Falls. I expected to receive my appointment for my second dose, but did not. I was told to go to Walgreens' website the Wednesday before my 28-day date for when I should receive the second shot. This makes me incredibly nervous. It seems like there's a potential for widespread chaos. Does this seem sensible?
Walgreens is one of our newer partners, and so initially they were opening up their appointments for a few days at a time. So we're still working with Walgreens. I know that they are successfully registering people, and we will monitor if there are any challenges with the second vaccine dose. But right now, you know, we understand what their system is, and so I would suggest you follow their directions. If you do have a problem and it looks like you can't get your vaccine, you know, call our vaccine number and check in with someone, and we will look into that concern. But right now, unless there is a problem, I would suggest continuing to move in the direction that Walgreens is suggesting, and hopefully their system will work, which we anticipate it would.
And the Walgreens system is outside of the state system, right? This is, and in fact, the doses that Walgreens are getting are actually separate from the allocation going to the state.
Yeah, right now the Walgreens allocation is separate. Kinney's is also separate in terms of the registration site. So if you go to Vermont's website, healthvermont.gov, and you go to the vaccine section, healthvermont.gov/myvaccine, you'll see when you click on your desire to get a vaccine, to get an appointment, there are three links. One is for the Vermont registration sites, and then there are two other links, one for Kinney's and one for Walgreens, and all three will get you appointments if you're in the eligible group.
Okay, so that Stephanie wrote in to say that they went to get their vaccine and did finally book through Walgreens, but that the Walgreens appointments were not linked on the state's vaccine website, so now they are?
What I mean by linked is you can find a link when you go to the Department of Health website that will bring you to the Walgreens website. So they are not merged systems. The link to bring you to the Walgreens site exists on our website, but you can also simply go into the Walgreens general website and find the vaccine link there as well.
Let's go to Phil, who's calling in from Berlin. Hi, Phil.
Hi, thank you. Thank you to Tracy and Jane for all the work you guys do above and beyond. I had a question concerning the next band. My wife and I will both be in that band starting Monday. And is there any way for us to register together so we can get to the same clinic without having to drive twice?
Yes, there is. First of all, try to do create an account ahead of time so you're ready to go. You can go in through the website, and you can select appointments and try to select times very close together. That often works for people. If you find that's not working, or it looks like every time you go in, the appointments are far apart. One tip there, if you want to be close together, looking for days in the first few days will be tricky because those appointments will be flying off the shelf right away. So you may want to push out, if you're willing to, push out maybe a couple of weeks and choose a date a couple of weeks out, and then quickly register. You can put in your email address and then add her as a dependent and then sign the two of you up. That's one way. If that's still not working, you can call the call center and let them know, and they will do their best. We can't guarantee it, but in most cases, we can get people pretty close so they can go together.
Bill in Craftsbury, you have a slightly different but kind of connected question, I believe. Go right ahead.
Yes, my wife's Canadian. Her primary care is in Alberta. We haven't been up there. Her oral surgeon's in Montreal. I've lived here. She's only 61, but I'm 74. I'm getting my shot and in Copley Hospital, I think, on the 4th. So I just don't know how we can't cross the border, you know, and I didn't know because she's a Canadian resident, but all of her primary care, because we go to Canada for all of her services. Now we can't do that.
Right. And so she's not eligible right now, but presumably at some point may be eligible by age. And Deputy Commissioner, because she's living here, would that count in terms of being able to get the vaccine?
That's right. If she's living here and she has a home address here, then she would be able to, once either her age comes up or if she's eligible by some other category, high-risk condition, or possibly by her work if we go in that direction. So depending on her eligibility, if she's living here and she has a home address here, she should be eligible there, but unfortunately not yet.
I want to squeeze in at least one more call. Sharon in Colchester, very quickly, what's your question?
Hello. I've already had COVID. I was a long hauler, and I'm very wary of getting a vaccine. Should I get a vaccine?
And when did you have COVID, Sharon?
In April.
Okay, so
it went all the way through July, maybe because it was already negative because the way the testing goes, you know.
Yeah, Sharon, I hear you, and I'm so sorry to hear that you have long hauler syndrome. Tracy Dolan, should she get the vaccine?
She should definitely get the vaccine. Yeah, having had COVID, if you don't have an acute infection of COVID or anything else at this time, you'd be open to get the vaccine, and I appreciate you asking about it, and I'm sorry that you're still feeling effects, getting the vaccine would be good protection. And thanks so much for your question.
We had one more caller on the line, but just in the in trying to be efficient here, Laura in Essex Junction wants to know about pre-existing conditions, the high-risk medical conditions. Is the state going to stick to the CDC list of what conditions make someone eligible?
We are mirroring the CDC list pretty closely. There might be a couple of either expansions or refinements on our end, but if you looked at the CDC list, it's likely it will be very similar to the CDC list. We've just continued to review the data, go back to our advisory team for some refinement so that people can understand the list as well, because you know we want to be as clear as we can. We want to get these high-risk people in and make sure that they are prioritized. But we also want to be inclusive if somebody is not very clear on what it means. So, for the most part, CDC, although you may see some slight changes in ours.
And again, type 1 diabetes recently added to that list, and you can find the full list at the Vermont Department of Health. Tracy Dolan is Deputy Commissioner of the Department. Thank you very much, as always, for being with us.
Thank you very much.